Beaker Street apparently is going away from the Point. I was given notification several weeks ago that February 6th would be the last show. So we've been preparing for that. And we've been looking around, and there are some possibilities, but at the moment, nothing is solid, and we're just kind of looking around. And we'll see what happens.
Did they give you any reason?
The reason given was that the show couldn't be sold. It wasn't profitable. I'm not going to debate that, but I think if you had a problem with the show not being sold, you might want to talk to the salespeople about it, because I think that in previous incarnations of this show, it has, there have been people, dying to get on it. So I don't know. I don't know what the market's like these days. But I find that just a little suspicious.
Yeah, coming at the same time, getting rid of their morning show.
Yeah. I wasn't going to say anything, but yeah.
Yeah. It seems on a station, too, that's doing well in the ratings to kind of screw with what seems to be working.
Yeah, I think that would get into personalities and so forth, and I really don't want to do that. But yeah, I'll just put it this way. If I was a manager coming into a market with a well-rated station, I think I would do a look-see for about 6 months or so before I started doing anything, really. So, but that's me.
Yeah. Well, tell me a little about Beaker Street. What's it, about 4 decades now?
I started doing Beaker Street in late 1966 at KAY, and it started out as about 30 minutes, and it was just kind of a nod toward all of the long hair, weird music that was coming in from the West Coast, and it just took off like a house of fire. It was amazing, the response we got, and it expanded very quickly within just a few weeks to a full hour, and then to 2 hours, and then eventually it was about 3.5 hours. And then after that, we had a program called Beaker Theater, which was due to the program director at the time at KAY was George Jennings, and he was an old radio drama freak, and he had hours and hours, thousands of hours of recorded radio drama, and at that time copyright would let us do it, because a lot of this stuff was from other countries and had been off the air for many years. So we ran Beaker Theater, and it was radio drama, and it was kind of off the wall stuff. We tended towards science fiction and gothic and strange programs, radio dramas, but people loved it. And one of the things that's been continuous is everybody wants to know, why can't we have Beaker Theater? And reason for that is the copyright laws these days. It just would not be. There's no way we could do it. For one thing, it would be very difficult to run down the copyright holders of a lot of those programs, and the others would be prohibitive. The costs would be prohibitive.
Mm-hmm. You started doing the show at the transmitter,
right? That was my claim to fame. I was a disc jockey who had a first-class radio telephone license, and from midnight to about 6 a.m. I was the entire thing. I was the disc jockey, the newsman, the transmitter engineer. And for a 50,000-watt radio station with a directional array, you have to have a first-class licensee operating the transmitter. So there I was.
Mm-hmm. And you had to use the background music initially to mask the sound of the transmitter equipment?
That's right. I was sitting right in the middle of the, in front of the transmitter. The transmitter was literally about 10 feet away from me, and this was a big old transmitter with big huge air-cooled tubes, and there were hundreds of cubic feet of air per minute blowing through those tubes. It was a pretty good background, and with the limiting that we had at that time, As soon as you stopped saying anything, the background would kind of whoosh up, and it would be kind of a weird sound in the background, which had you tending to want to talk continuously so as to keep that knocked down, or you had to have something going on that would keep the limiter pulling the level down. And that's how the background came to be. So I looked for something that was kind of different and kind of strange, and again, it was a happy accident.
And it was an incredible signal at that time.
Oh, yeah. KAY was a very powerful signal, both north and south. We had QSL cards or confirmation cards from people that had heard us all over the, Central America, North America, South America, from the tip of South America all the way up to the north, to the Arctic Circle. We had people that could hear the signal.
And heard in Cuba, too?
Oh, yeah. Red. Yeah, it was heard in Cuba so well that for a while, for about 10 or 15 days, at night during the Cuban Missile Crisis, there were a number of Cuban nationals that came in and read the news to the people of Cuba through KAY. And we received a plaque for that, and this was before I was there, but still, that was the reach of that radio station.
Did it for what was about 5 or 6 years on KAY?
From late 66 to about 76, closer to 10 years. I take that back, about 74, 66 to 74, about 8 years. And the station management, I don't know, we just got kind of crossways. There was a new breeze was blowing, FM was coming in, and there were several of us got an opportunity to go to work for an FM station, KLAZ, which no longer is in Little Rock, but is now in Hot Springs. But we moved to KLAZ, and due to contractual things there, I was Uncle Clive there. And then that was sold to Ron Curtis, and there was just a whole long string of events. But yeah, that's how that came about. At one point, I was about ready to come back and go to work for KAY again. I wanted to do Beaker Street on KAY again, and that was about the time it sold and went religious. So I had the opportunity of, and it was quite an honor for the other guys to have had me be the last one on the air on KAY as a rocker. And it was from this building, within just a few feet of where I'm sitting right now, that I signed KAY off as a rock station. And here we go. This is The Point, KKPT, Little Rock. I'm Clyde Clifford. And this is Beaker Street.
Sorry, I'm not distracting you, am I?
Nah.
Okay. To do the final shift, the final hours of the old KAY.
Yeah, and we did it on the old transmitter to boot. Over the years, they had installed a new transmitter, but that night they had fired up the old transmitter, and I signed it off on the old transmitter. I'd been back over there a couple of times, and each time I have been over there, for some reason or other, it was on the old transmitter. And at this point, I think the old transmitter has aired its last RF, but it was really interesting. All the times that I have been on KAY was on that same transmitter. So that was kind of weird.
Yeah. Well, you then did... I really heard it when you went to KZ95 and mm-hmm. did Beaker Street there. How did you come back to do another round?
Well, I had been out for a while, and they had gotten the station going over there, and for a while they're kind of reaching around. It was Pat Walsh who was the manager of the station over there. Pat had been the manager at KAY, and they decided, let's see what happens. So we started out on a Saturday night and quickly moved it to Sunday night because it seemed to work better on Sunday night. It didn't work better for me because I had to be at work the next day. But we moved to Sunday night, and that's where it stayed. And after about a year and a half, they changed the format there. Tom Wood had been asking me if I would be interested in coming to Magic 105. And at that point, I called Tom up and said, "Hey, Tom, are you still interested?" And he was. And we were off and running there. And I was there for, geez, longer than I was on KAY the first time around. So it was really kind of funny. Magic 105 actually was more my home than KAY when we started it.
Which is ironic, even though you'll forever be associated with KAY.
Well, I'm proud to be associated with KAY. It was an interesting and fun station. I'm glad I had the time on AM radio, too. AM radio is a strange beast, but it's fun. Being aware of, well, in fact, through that I was an engineer and knew about those things anyway, was being aware of the reach of an AM radio station. And it's amazing. It's a fun thing to be involved with.
Because you don't know where the signal's bouncing around. I mean, it goes a lot further than FM, definitely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it bounces, and it'll hit here and skip there. And we had QSL cards from Vietnam. We shouldn't have been able to get there, but we did, because they obviously were listening to what we were playing, because the QSL card, you know, listed the programming, and it tallied. So we got into places where it was just not supposed to be, but it did. And that was part of the fun of it.
So why is it important? What would you like to have happen with the show? It's coming to an end here.
Well, I'm looking for another station that would be interested in carrying Beaker Street. It's gotten to the point where it's sort of become an Arkansas institution. It's kind of bigger than something that it's bigger than me, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. There's so many people that enjoy the show. It's become sort of a staple for a lot of people, and I just feel like I need to keep trying to be on the air for them. I have a lot of people that used to live in the signal area of KAY, and who are now in other parts of the country, but they listen through the stream. And, I mean, there are people in Washington, in Washington State. There are people in Iowa. There are people in Kansas. There are people all across the country that listen through the stream. And I'm trying to find a place to be there for them, too, because it's kind of like a little piece of home for them. So.
Great. Anything else you want to add?
Like I said, I was the little guy that was in just the right place at just the right time, and it was as much a learning experience for me all the way through, and I learned as much about music as anybody else. I've heard from so many people that say, you know, musicians who say that they became musicians because of Beaker Street, people who just had a different grasp of music. Their attitudes, their direction of life changed because of me. And I don't know, it's been very rewarding to have been part of this. So I really enjoy it, and I want to continue it as long as is possible, and I'm doing my best to see that we do that.
You had quite a response on with the radio info bulletin board. I read a lot of the comments there, so people...
It's been a part of people's lives, and I've been a part of people's lives, and I'm humbled by that, but it's also a lot of fun to know that you are a part of people. So it's makes you feel bigger than, you know, bigger than just an individual. It makes you feel like I don't know exactly how to express it, but it just feels good to be a part of other people's daily life. Somewhere on the station there's a disclaimer for that, but we won't worry about that. This is Beaker Street. That's Joe Cocker. Mad Dogs and Englishmen, let's go get stoned. This is Beaker Street, and this is Chris Rhea, looking for a rainbow. It's just been a good, it's it's been fun to have been part of this. It's been fun to have been able to bring music to people that they wouldn't have heard. And it's fun to play music that won't get played because of the way radio and record companies are these days. And that's the other thing. I'm constantly aware of the fact that way back when I started on KAY, the only place you got new music was the radio. And that has changed. A lot of people don't realize it yet, and I think certain management types may not either. But the radio is not where the majority of people find their music anymore. They find it on the internet. They find it in a lot of different places. They find it on satellite radio. And as a result, following the formula that's always worked before, I don't think that's going to work anymore. The thing that I do is I try to find stuff that's interesting and is not, you know, the daily fare. And I think that's what's made the show work all this time, is the fact that I'm just kind of going in my own little weird direction that seems to have a lot of people enjoy what I'm playing. And, you know, people ask me what my favorite music is, and I'm hard put to say because I really don't have a favorite group. I look for different things and the things that are interesting that nobody plays.
How did you pick the music?
I just pick it on the fly. It sounds artsy as hell to say this, but it really is a stream of consciousness. I pick music. I really never know what I'm going to play when I walk in the door here. And I find something, and then it goes from there, and that suggests something else, and then that will suggest something else. I'll go in all sorts of different directions, and then maybe, you know, halfway through the show, I'll start going in a different direction. And each time, I mean, a particular song may suggest one thing one night, and it may suggest something else another night. So it's I can't tell you how I do it. It's kind of like like asking the caterpillar how he walks. You know, when he tries to tell you, he ends up laying in the ditch trying to figure it out. I really don't know. I just do it.
That's incredible freedom, because most people on the radio have a playlist in front of them. And
well, that's
point blank.
Yeah, that's what's made this work, is the fact that it is not like just about any other radio show. And as long as I continue being not like any other radio show, I guess I'll continue.